Working with Tolerance by Stephen Bates and Jonathan Sergison from ARC Journal, ARQ, 1999. And there's a short abstract. This paper defines an architectural position in which the concept of tolerance provides a strategy for making work. It also represents a moment in time within a continuing assessment and reassessment of the ideas of the practice we established 3 years ago. Ideas are explored through built and speculative projects and tested through critical discussion with collaborators. The source of these ideas within a historical context is acknowledged, and their application in a number of our recent projects and buildings is illustrated. Working with Tolerance. Whether consciously or not, architecture affects our perception of the world. As any building is located in a place, it inevitably adjusts our understanding of that place. Buildings not only reshape the physical environment and therefore our view of spatial relationships, they also instill an emotive response based upon association and memory. In this way, building is communicative. If acted upon consciously within a conceptual framework, architecture may go beyond program and site by engaging with personal and collective experience of place and our position in the world. This architecture embodies notions of tolerance as it undertakes a transformation of places and spaces. It is also inclusive and able to hold multiple meanings, and through a generosity of individual interpretation, it invites occupation. These ideas inform our approach towards an architecture of tolerance, which, through building, seeks to make observations of the world around us more explicit. In the late 19th century, thinkers like William Morris advocated the possibility of buildings communicating something other than the means by which they were constructed, thus preparing the ground for utopian ideology within an emerging modernism. While Le Corbusier at Pessac in 1925 attempted to display the potential of standardization through reinforced concrete, he was perhaps more interested in projecting the ideals of a new urban habitat through superficial appearance rather than through construction technique. However, another significant factor in this approach was the desire to express change and newness in the light of contemporary technological invention, aeroplanes, machinery, and so on. This necessitated a rejection of the condition of places and resulted in a distancing from cultural and sociological experience. Viewed from today, this celebration of universality seems simplistic and at odds with our own reading of the everyday. In the 1950s and 60s, the ideological determinism of modernism was questioned in a number of buildings which acknowledged the conditions of their setting and sought to express ideas through their making. In the Sugden House project, built in Watford on the outskirts of London in 1955-56, Allison and Peter Smithson, operating within the conservative constraints typical of UK planning legislation and control, redefined the image of a suburban house. A conglomeration of building techniques were employed freely in order to accommodate spatial ideas. Modernist conventions such as the free composition of the openings were combined with more specific transformations of the common forms and materials to make a building that encouraged a reassessment of what was commonly understood to be a home. As a result, the appearance of the house communicated something of the conditions of its place in the world in both emotive and physical terms. In the Church of St. Mark, built between 1956 and 1960 in a suburb of Stockholm, Sigurd Lewerentz displayed an equally free yet intellectually rigorous use of construction technique to communicate fundamental ideas embodied in material. The spatial intensity of the brick surfaces used for walls, roofs, and floors heightened the awareness of the space and its intended use. The usual modesty of brickwork was transformed by the way it was applied to form an enveloping surface. Through subtle transformations and the intensity resulting from rigorous conceptual strategies, these works questioned conventional association, offering a subjective and shifting experience of the world. Tolerance. Within this historical context, our own ideas of tolerance may be explained in relation to a framework of conceptual ideas that guide projects from strategy to detail. Tolerance indicates an acknowledgement of the found conditions of a situation in both emotive and physical terms, and an ability to work with and make interpretations of these conditions. Tolerance informs an approach to construction in which structural solutions accommodate spatial ideas rather than dictate them. The enveloping material then becomes the important element in the expression of space. Also, tolerance offers tangible possibilities for connecting spaces and provides systems which enable rather than prescribe use. Embodying conceptual ideas in production with the objective of encouraging new ways to see the commonplace has been the concern of minimal and pop art, as well as socio-realist photography. The communicative nature of this work has captured our attention. In Ramsgate, 1967, the English photographer Tony Ray Jones makes a critical observation of a set of unrelated everyday situations. His observations present an ambiguity and humour which are heightened by composition and spatial relationships. The conditions of the everyday are therefore transformed by the subjective interpretation made by the artist and then the viewer. Bruce Nauman's Dream Passage of 1983 explores the concentrated use of the familiar through construction, material, and form. The spatial intensity of the corridor-like enclosure is heightened by its setting within the context of a gallery space, the flooding of yellow light from a conventional fluorescent fitting, and the confusion caused by mirrored projections. Put together and presented to invite physical engagement, the assembly of familiar objects takes on new meanings which defy conventional association and instead appeal directly to our emotions. These ideas have guided the development of projects in our office for the last 3 years and will continue to evolve as the nature of our practice develops. Enabling. Our interest in providing enabling systems or frameworks which offer a wide potential for use and occupation may be seen in our competition entry for a new housing development on the edge of Sittingbourne in Kent. The presence of man-made bounds on the site led us to extend and overlay the landscape with a network of service bundways. This infrastructure of bundways organised the mixed-use development of housing, community and commercial facilities, providing orientation in a way which was not prescriptive and which allowed for a variety of alternative interpretations in the use of the space for inhabitation. Form making. Our pursuit of concentrated and reduced form making, based on the familiar images of buildings, may be seen in our design of a pub in Walsall, West Midlands. The shed-like appearance of the building is reminiscent of the nearby 19th century warehouses and the superstores of recent commercial developments. The shape of the larger-than-usual roof is adjusted in response to the footprint of the site, giving it a uniqueness which derives from its place. The program allowed us to reintroduce the provision of communal interiors in town centres, the presence of the enclosing roof form perhaps communicating something of its publicness. Cladding and lining. By developing structural solutions which lie latent, the cladding and lighting of our buildings define a spatial character in such a way that they separately articulate the conditions of outside and inside. In our recent competition entry for the Museum of World Culture in Gothenburg, Sweden, the building is conceived as a vast container. The concrete perimeter walls form a structural box within which the collection of spaces are stacked. The distribution of these volumes allows a rich configuration. The building's concrete shell is insulated on the exterior and wrapped with extruded clay planks. The planks are arranged horizontally and are rough textured and open jointed. In certain places, they are turned louver-like to admit daylight through openings in the concrete shell. The grain of the cladding and the monolithic scale of the principal volume engages with the apartment blocks opposite. Inside, linings to the floors, walls, and ceilings of the galleries create volumes which vary in shape, describing an interior character which is served by, but not subservient to, the principal container. The linings of timber, plasterboard, and canvas, attuned to control daylight, distribute surfaces and provide a material tectonic. At a smaller scale, the refurbishment and extension of some existing farm buildings illustrates how a cladding of horizontal cedar boards provides an outer surface, which will, in time, become homogeneous with the fabric of the existing building. The inner linings of taped and painted plasterboard on metal wall and ceiling systems make a number of volumes of varying size and height, enhancing the individual identity of each space. Lighting is incorporated in the slack space occupied by the structure and articulated as part of the lining with opal polycarbonate panels laid flush with the plasterboard. Adding and adjusting. The Dorset project also describes a strategy of adding and adjusting to sets of given conditions. This approach is based on accepting the constant process of change and transformation that takes place in buildings and a willingness to reveal this evolution by adding new layers, thereby becoming part of this cycle rather than attempting to delete, complete, or reinvent. In the studios, remedial work to the existing structure, the laying of a new concrete ground surface, the addition of insulation and the arrangement of services are displayed such that they begin to have an equivalence with what was already there. The clamping of the rough sawn cedar louvers to the face of the building also displays this act of adding, while at the same time creating a density and layering which provide new possibilities in the modification of daylight. The refurbishment of a 19th century building in Clerkenwell, London, for a graphic design company also illustrates this approach of adding and revealing. In this project, the existing spatial characteristics of the tall and narrow building are exposed and then enhanced by new interventions made of ordinary materials, which together form a setting for occupation and work. The angular shape of the existing construction is made explicit by the arrangement of a single space on each floor. Fluorescent lighting tubes are recessed in ceilings and walls giving strong horizontal and vertical light strips, which further reveal the asymmetrical form of the existing construction. The use of mirrored walls extends the view of the ceiling and gives unexpected reflections of the city and sky. The existing brick party walls and timber windows are exposed as legitimate elements of the whole, against which a new folded storage wall is detailed to reveal the layers of its construction. In this way, a new identity is created and given character by the variety of new and old material surfaces. Dwelling. We often refer to our work as the making of backgrounds, by which we mean the provision of space that may support and enhance dwelling, An understanding of the contingencies of contemporary day-to-day life has led us to make interior spaces which may be interconnected and adaptable, but at the same time present and identifiable. Informal photographs taken following the completion of the interior of a London apartment for a writer reveal how our interventions form an uninterrupted setting, which may then be given purpose, identity, and private value by their owners. Another project, also for a writer, this time documented before completion, illustrates something of the presence of this background and the potentials in making interconnected spaces. Material. The use of common and modest material in the making of our projects is a strategy for engaging with the familiar components of everyday situations. The reuse and reconfiguration of familiar materials may provide a revaluing of things which have previously been taken for granted. Our project for a Montessori nursery school in Maida Vale, London, includes a timber-framed extension which is clad with opal and clear polycarbonate panels. The simple form of the building and the modesty of its cladding copies the lean-to sheds and outbuildings found in this residential area. However, the generous scale of the extension and the particular configuration of polycarbonate panels transforms the usual experience of such things and creates a unique identity to the school. Images. In our view, the experience of everyday life is highly influenced by personal and collective association relating to the images of buildings. By images, we mean the aspect of an object that relates to appearance and character and which stimulates an associative and emotional response in us. While it may be argued that most architectural acts produce images of things, we believe that few architects consciously work with images. In our current project for a prototype semi-detached house for a housing trust in southern England, we have been speculating upon the house-like image of a house. Developing the form of a building so that it is recognisably a home. The overall form of the building was reinforced by a minimum expression of joints and overlaps between materials and surfaces. Roof and wall cladding are continuous and the windows are freely arranged to allow walls and the roof to flow together, forming a solid mass. This gives the appearance of all-round protection, a vital characteristic of the experience of home.